This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, January 8th, 2010. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, stand-up poetry. For decades now, James Tate has been one of the funniest, most beguiling voices in American poetry. Reading one of his poems is kind of like entering a dream, and you're not sure if it's a good dream or a bad dream, a forgettable dream, or a dream that will pester you for the rest of your life. They're weird, his poems, and often laugh out loud funny, as you'll hear in a moment. We're going to listen to two James Tate poems that he read at the Key West Literary Seminar. You heard that right, Key West Literary Seminar. Each January, readers and writers thumb their noses at the rest of us stuck in freezing, snowbound states and indulge in an orgy of readings, lectures, workshops, and parties in sunny Key West, Florida. The 2010 seminar starts today, and I'm on the phone with poet Arlo Haskell, the Key West Literary Seminar's media director. Arlo, how's the weather?
It's cold for us, which means 60s, so we're all bundled up. I have a hat and a vest on today.
Somehow that makes me happy to hear. I don't know why. I was expecting sunny skies and beach weather.
It is sunny skies.
Oh, it is sunny. Okay. Well, at least you got that. So the Key West Literary Seminar has been going on for more than 25 years, and the main reason I'm talking to you today is because of the extraordinary audio archive that you guys have been putting together over the past 25 years and posted online on your website. And there's a lot to choose from, but you and I settled on some excerpts from a reading that James Tate gave in 2003. You were there at that reading. What was it like?
You know, typically poetry readings, there's always poems that you laugh at, but I think the overall tone veers towards seriousness. And, you know, James Tate does this thing where he has this very deadpan delivery, as we'll hear, but his comedic timing is such that it was a highlight of the 2003 seminar, and the audience was in stitches.
Let's listen to the first poem he read from his 2004 book, Return to the City of White Donkeys. Here's James Tate reading, Of Whom Am I Afraid?
I was feeling a little at loose ends, so I went to the farmer's supply store and just strolled up and down the aisles, examining the merchandise, none of which was of any use to me. But the feed sacks and seeds had a calming effect on me. At some point, there was an old grizzled farmer standing next to me holding a rake. And I said to him, Have you ever read much Emily Dickinson? Sure, he said. I reckon I've read all of her poems at least a dozen times. She's a real pistol. And I've even gotten into several fights about them with some of my neighbors. One guy said she was too prissy for him. And I said, Hell, she's tougher than you'll ever be. When I finished with him, I made him sit down and read the complete poems over again, all 1,775 of them. He finally said, You're right, Clyde. She's tougher than I'll ever be. And he was crying like a baby when he said that. Clyde slapped my cheek and headed toward the counter with his new rake. I bought some ice tongs, which made me surprisingly happy, and for which I had no earthly use.
Why did you find the idea absurd of two old grizzled farmers fighting over Emily Dickinson? Is that just so absolutely unlikely?
I suppose we've come to think that it's unlikely. I mean, people tend to think of poetry as existing among, I don't know, a more educated class or a class that doesn't involve the farmers at the feed store, you know, many of whom probably do read poetry and have favorite poems. But we don't expect, we don't expect anyone to have read all 1,775 poems by Emily Dickinson.
Right. But, you know, I once did a piece about a guy who almost got into a fight in the East Village in New York over Walt Whitman.
Well, there's a good legacy of poetic fighting. Actually, right here in Key West, there was once a fist fight between Ernest Hemingway and Wallace Stevens.
Really?
One of my favorite local stories.
I would have put my money on Ernest Hemingway.
Hemingway won. Stephen started the fight, and Hemingway put him down pretty quickly, as the story goes.
I never heard that. That's amazing. Let's go back to the poem for a second. It's basically an anecdote, and a lot of his poems function anecdotally. They start crazy, and they end crazy, but they cohere in a weird way.
It's true. Yeah, in that sense, he's definitely a storyteller, and his poems have a beginning, middle, and an end, and there's usually some kind of resolution at the end. There's always or almost always a narrator who's having this experience or standing by watching it.
Yeah, the befuddled narrator of a James Tate poem, usually
right.
somebody who's kind of lost in a dreamlike place, doesn't know quite what to make of what's happening around him.
Exactly.
And then we're going to hear a little bit of that in the next poem. It's about... Well, it's a Christmas poem, actually, and Christmas is over, but we're going to listen to it anyway, and there's a reason for that. You'll hear it in the poem. And Tate said that he had inadvertently accumulated some holiday poems.
We'll soon be doing some greeting cards. Get some real money at last.
Yeah, I think this was the last poem he's going to read, and the audience had boiled to a level of hilarity, and that just sent everybody over the edge, it seemed like.
Now, this poem is about Santa Claus. Here's James Tate reading The Special Guest.
Down the chimney came old Saint Nick, which was weird because it was noon on a hot July day. He was covered in soot. "Well, this is quite a surprise," I said. "You should get that thing cleaned," he said. "We weren't expecting you this time of year," I said. "You wouldn't happen to have a beer, would you?" he said. "It's so hot in this suit, you wouldn't believe it." "Sure, I can get you a beer," I said. When I returned, he said, "Where the hell am I anyway?" I told him, and he looked confused. "Do you know what day it is?" he said. I told him, and he looked bewildered. He took a long slug of beer. "I hate to admit it, but I'm not really sure what year it is," he said. I told him, and he thought about that for a long time. "Can I have another beer?" he said. When I returned, he said, "Why am I dressed like this? It's hot out there. You live in the North Pole. You're only supposed to come down here at Christmas," I said. "Oh," he said, "Mrs. Claus died. I'm lonely up there. I want to live down here in a nice little house like this one. Do you have any money, some savings perhaps?" I said. "I'm broke," he said. "I gave it all away. I have nothing." "You could get a job," I said. "I'm too old, and besides, I don't know how to do anything," he said. "We have a spare room now that the kids have gone," I said. "You could live here and help out with odd jobs." He looked around. "Can I have another beer?" he said. I got it for him. "I just want to get out of these old clothes and shave this damn beard. It's too hot." He really did look miserable. "Well, you can borrow my razor and maybe we can get to the mall," I said. "Maybe we can get some summer clothes at Mr. Biggs." "I'm just skin and bones," he said. "There's no meat on me. I haven't eaten in months, maybe years, I don't know," he said. "Well, then, maybe some of my clothes might fit you," I said. "I'd like that," he said. "I'd like to be able to walk down the street without people making such a fuss." After another beer, Nick shaved and tried on one of my shirts and a pair of cotton slacks. He was a gaunt old man who stayed in his room most of the time. He seemed to not remember his old life at the pole. So Jill and I never mentioned it. He liked to rake leaves in the fall. I don't know why. Jill knitted him a sweater, and he cried when she gave it to him. Then he kissed her, and I said, "That's enough." Thank you.
So, Arlo, what's up with Santa?
Santa's he's found himself in a pretty tight spot, it seems like. He seems to have become, if not an alcoholic, at least a heavy beer drinker.
And, yeah.
He's struggling.
Yeah. And this seems to be a feeling or a situation that comes up frequently in James Tate poems. Not Santa, but someone who is stuck being who he is and wants out, right?
Absolutely. And it's frequently the narrator of his poems, but as many times it's somebody else in the poem.
Mm-hmm. So today, the 28th annual Key West Literary Seminar begins. So tell us briefly what we're missing, those of us who are stuck in cold states.
Well, this year for the Key West Literary Seminar, we are focusing on poetry. Current poet laureate Kay Ryan will be here along with six of her fellow poets laureate.
Wow.
We have Robert Pinsky, Billy Collins, Richard Wilbur, Mark Strand will be here.
Uh-huh.
We have Yusef Komunyakaa and Rita Dove,
wow,
Natasha Trethewey, a kind of amazing star-studded list of poets.
And fortunately, all along, you guys have been making very good recordings, very high-quality recordings of the readings there, and you can find them on the website, kwls.org, keywestliteraryseminar.org. Thanks so much, Arlo.
Sure thing, Curtis. Thanks for having me on the show.
Arlo Haskell is the media director of the Key West Literary Seminar. His latest book of poems, Joker, is published by Sandpaper Press. The James Tate poems we heard are in his collection, Return to the City of White Donkeys, published by HarperCollins. You can read more of his poems on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also download hundreds of other podcasts and read countless poems and articles. We'd like to acknowledge the recent passing of Ruth Lilly, whose incredible generosity led to the creation of the Poetry Foundation. Without Ruth Lilly, this program and so much else would simply not exist. Our condolences to her family. We'd love to hear what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.